Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome to the Zoo interim results presentation for the period to September 18. So a quick recap, Zoo develops proprietary software for the home entertainment industry. Software is what differentiates us in the market, but we don't commercialize it in the usual way, in that it's not software that we license to third parties, but rather we retain the software as our point of difference in the market. And it enables us to offer significant competitive advantage and benefits that we pass on to our clients. And I'll expand on that a little more in a moment. The services specifically that we provide, since we monetize this software by providing these services into home entertainment, are around enabling content, TV series and feature films, to be prepared so that it can be commercialized all around the world by localizing that content into different languages using subtitling and dubbing, and also performing digital packaging services to assemble the materials together so that they can be delivered through the many different routes to market that now exist through streaming platforms, transactional video on demand platforms as well. Our clients include biggest names in the media space, many of the big studios, including Hollywood studios, as well as big producers of TV series, and also a number of the leading over-the-top operators providing streaming and transactional video on demand services to consumers. So I'm very pleased to welcome Phil Blundell to our board, who joins us as CFO, and we're going to get right into the financial results.
Right, good afternoon. So I'm going to quickly go through the numbers for the half year, starting with the highlights. So as you can see on the screen there, our total revenues are up 17% in the half year compared to the same period last year. The takeaway there really is that a strong performance by our dubbing service and a softening of our subtitling business, which Stuart is going to address in a separate slide. I'll go into a bit more detail on the revenues in a minute. Gross profits were up only slightly, and the reason why it's only gone up slightly is that we have invested very heavily in our capacity, anticipating future revenue growth half two and into following years. So as you guys all know, our gross profit is after not only the freelancer cost, but also the cost of internal staff who work on delivering projects for customers. We also invested significantly in our R&D team in the half, in our sales team. We doubled our sales team, and we also doubled our marketing spend in the half. Again, planned investment. As we saw the dubbing business starting to take off, we felt we really had to make sure the world knew about it so that we can, again, win lots more future business in that area. So adjusted EBITDA at $500,000, down from 1.3 last year. Finally, though, cash position is still reasonably strong, $900,000 in the bank. And on top of that, we have $2.5 million of credit facilities that have been unused in the half. So going into a little bit more detail, we've broken out our three key lines of business. Localization, which includes the dubbing and the subtitling, is our core engine of growth. Overall, that was up 21%. As I said, the dubbing business more than doubled in the half. So we're very pleased about that. That sort of demonstrates the acceptance in the marketplace of our solution, and it's gaining traction. Our digital packaging service line comprises two elements. We do authoring and other pre-delivery services for the OTT platforms. That business is growing reasonably well, up 20% in the period. But our more physical business, where we're supporting DVD and Blu-ray, that shrunk in 10% in the half, as was anticipated. And then the final line of business is our historic licensing revenue, which again, because it's supporting physical assets, DVDs and Blu-ray, we are managing decline in that revenue stream. Moving on to the margins. So, just giving a little bit more detail than I gave before. On the localization area, we were down 3% compared to the same period last year in terms of the percentage points. That's really because of this investment in the people. So most of the people we recruited were into the dubbing and into the subtitling area, getting them skilled up, ready to deliver significant revenue growth in the second half of the year and into next year. The really pleasing thing is that the third-party cost on dubbing improved by 11 percentage points. So it shows we're actually able to deliver a very cost-effective manner now going forward. Digital packaging, that was really more of a sales mix change that moved the gross margin. That's really because the historic DVD stuff is more profitable than the new services we're providing to the OTT platforms. And as always been the case, our software licensing is very high margin. There's virtually no cost involved at all. And just to give you a sort of pictorial representation of that, you can see that we had 38% margins in the first half of up to September 17, and it's 33 and up to September 18, and the difference being the sales mix, those historic ones becoming less of a percentage of our total revenues, and secondly, our investment in people for the future. So, unless there's any questions at this stage, I'll hand over to Stuart.
So the key operational highlights we wanted to pick out are firstly that the period has been is one of continuing investment in the business, and all to build and strengthen our foundations to support future growth in the second half and beyond. The first area I wanted to touch upon is in technological enhancements that we've made, so further additions in functionality and capability in our cloud platforms, and I'll expand on that in a moment. Secondly, our freelancer network. So our business, although it's a service proposition, is highly scalable through a combination of our software platforms that give us this capability to be able to uplift volumes of production very efficiently, coupled together with a large network of freelancers who provide all the linguistic services for the service lines that we offer. So this network of freelancers includes translators who are providing subtitling as well as scripting services, together with voice actors who are providing dubbing services. And that community doubled in size on a year-on-year basis. We also, with a partner, established a facility in Dubai that is a strategic initiative for us in partnership with one of our affiliates due to the growth that we anticipate in that region. And we expect the amount of Arabic original content that will be sourced and also content that will be localized into Arabic is going to grow over the coming period.
If that's a partner, what investment have you had to make?
In the actual facility itself, we haven't made any investment. The partner has taken on that risk itself in partnership with us, on the understanding that as we expand and receive business from our clients that involve services related to Arabic, that partner will be the entity that we work with in order to fulfill those requirements.
It's just you said you've made important investments, so I'm just wondering what the actual investment in the Arabic
The investment has been
business.
In the, well, is it's a combination of working with that partner to help them establish the facility. So although they've incurred it's the cost of creating the facility and operating it, we have guided them very closely in how to configure it. So we've basically specified it for them, and we've sent our staff over to help them actually set that facility up. Together with the fact that obviously, in order to be able to offer these services, we need to expand our resource of Arabic language specialists. And whilst this partner is helping to do that, we're still engaged in the job of identifying and selecting these linguistic specialists and making sure they're trained and onboarded in our systems and all part of our ecosystem. Obviously, the additions that we have made to our technology platform have enabled us to broaden the dubbing service, and I'll expand on that again in a moment as well. The second area that I wanted to cover as the operational highlights is one that Phil alluded to, and that we saw some softening of subtitling sales in our first half. And this was a direct consequence of a change that was implemented in the in its supply chain by one of our biggest clients, which is a major over-the-top operator for subscription video on demand. And the change they put into place was really to support future growth and expansion. So it was a change made for very positive reasons, but it had quite far-reaching implications in terms of the partners with which they work, and that's both content partners who are licensing original programs to them, usually on a non-exclusive basis, together with organizations like us who are providing services to take that content and purpose them so they can be delivered all around the world. So in that transition from old programs to new, there was a period during which subtitling orders were paused pending completion of the transition. And that period of about 4 months led to a softening specifically of subtitling sales, not only for Zoo, but for other providers of these services in the industry. So what I can tell you now is that we're through the other side of that, that transition made by our client is complete. So the new programs are now working effectively. We're seeing higher levels of orders than we saw prior to that disruption. And we see a favorable outcome in terms of the new programs being enabling Zoo to deliver a growing share of the requirements within that ecosystem.
Has there been a change in who picks up the final bill as it moved from that operator to the origination partner?
Yes, so that is one of the changes that this migration from one scheme to another has brought about, and indeed that was all part of this OTT operator's plan. So it's the effect of the change is such that the organizations that we will invoice, we are invoicing for these services, is changing. So it's now the case that we are invoicing a larger number of content producers for these services, which is obviously beneficial to Zoo from a point of view of revenue diversification. The final point on our operational highlights is to do with the strengthening of our management team. As I mentioned already, we're delighted that Phil Modell has joined us as CFO, and also we've been expanding our business development activity on an international basis under an ex-Deluxe executive who we're working with, who is helping us to drive initiatives in Dubai and elsewhere. What I'd like to do now is just quickly take you through the four pillars of our strategy and just give you a quick update on the progress we've made in the half. The first of which is innovation. So clearly our proposition is differentiated in the market by virtue of this proprietary software that we create and preserve for our own exclusive use. And there are three key things that we have developed and deployed in the period that I wanted to highlight. The first of which concerns the style of dubbing that we're now able to offer. And in fact, this addition means that we're now able to undertake any dubbing project that could occur within the entertainment industry. Prior to this particular development to support lip sync dubbing, we were offering services primarily in the area of a style of dubbing called voiceover. So voiceover is a simpler approach to dubbing. It's used for particular genres of content, but also it's quite popular in certain countries. The lip sync approach is much more demanding. It's more challenging. It requires more skill and care, and it attracts a much higher price in the market. So by developing this capability within our platform to support lip sync dubbing, we're now able to undertake this kind of work as well. And we've undertaken a number of projects in the half, and the feedback from our clients has been very positive. Two other key initiatives in the period that are related to one another concern the way in which we deal with the industry's requirement to work on titles that are still in production. So because of the rate which content is being produced and now released for international consumption through these OTT platforms, it's necessary to begin the process of localization before that content has been completed. So that's to say, a TV series may be in production, and we may be supplied with video for the first episodes, for example, of that series, before their edit is complete. And what we know is that before that that title is completed, there may be changes to the program. So there may be the order of the scenes may change, new scenes may be added, other scenes may be taken away. So clearly there's a real kind of version control challenge here, in that we receive a video, we start work on that, so we start subtitlers creating subtitle versions of it. We start work on dubbing and get voice actors starting to record their lines in, you know, in 9 or more languages. And then a few days or a week later, we may receive a new version of that video version of that same program. So what we need to do is kind of work out how that new version differs from the first, because although in general we may be given a steer on how those versions differ, the actual detail, you know, exactly what scenes at what time code have changed, is something that we have to work out for ourselves. And then, of course, we've got to work out then if those things have changed, then these things need to be redone. Obviously, we won't want to re-record anything that's already been done that's unchanged, so we need to carefully identify what has been changed, so we can then trigger additional work by all those voice actors in all those languages that we're working on. Now, this is a requirement that has been in the industry for some time, and there is a greater demand for organisations like us to fulfil that requirement, given the enormous volume of content that's now coming to the market, and the fact that OTT operators are releasing, you know, all episodes of a TV series all at the same time. The way that it's done traditionally is in a very tortuous, error-prone, you know, human-intensive way. So literally it starts with someone sitting down with two video screens side by side, playing the two versions of the video to spot how they differ. And to write those things down, and to track them, to work out then if there's a new scene here, so that means there are lines of dialogue that need to be recorded by these characters. So that means in these languages, these voice actors need to record new lines. So as you can imagine, that's quite a torturous process.
The studio isn't telling you what's changed.
Correct. They're giving you a steer. They may be saying, for example, oh, some of the scenes have been reshuffled, and we added a new scene, you know, at about halfway through. But obviously we need something much more precise than that to be able to do something with it. So the traditional vendors in the industry will do that in a very manual way, which clearly is error prone, and things are missed and mistakes are made. So a couple of key initiatives in the period enabled us to address that in a really elegant, powerful, scalable, secure, and efficient way. The first is to do with our ZooScripts platform, and this is the platform that that we use to initiate a project that we know is going to go through both subtitling and dubbing work streams. So when we know something is going to be going into multiple languages across subtitling and dubbing, we will start those projects in ZooScripts, and that enables all those downstream processes to work much more efficiently than they would in the kind of traditional ecosystem where they will be undertaken by different organizations. So what we've built into ZooScripts is a version control capability. What that means is that from the original script, we can signal that even though we may have begun localization across many languages, both subtitling and dubbing, in ZooScripts, we can indicate that a certain line has changed, or that some lines have been added, or they've been resequenced. And what ZooScripts will do is automatically work out how the repercussions of those changes. So ZooScripts then automatically say, we specifically need these voice actors to come in and re-record or record for the first time these lines. So that's an incredibly efficient innovation for the purposes of version control. The other key innovation is a development of a capability that we call Delta. And what this does is you can provide it with two versions of a video, and Delta will automatically analyze those and tell you exactly how the dialogue has changed from one to the next. So Delta will say, for example, okay, in this video, I can see that scenes 7 and 8 have switched order. So they're now in, you know, what used to be 8 is now 7 and vice versa. I can see scene 12 is brand new, and the old scene 14 has been deleted. So it can give that in a very precise way. So that then feeds into ZooScripts, and then that information then gets propagated all the way through. So what that means is, as soon as we receive a video from a client, which is an update on a previous version, within minutes, we're sending instructions. Our system is sending instructions to voice actors to tell them they need to come and record new lines, and tell them exactly what lines they need to record. And obviously, in that process, if, for example, scenes have changed in their sequence, ZooScripts, informed by Delta, can automatically resequence that information. So that reordering is all taken care of fully automatically within the system. So obviously, the upshot of all of that is that we're able to do this in a very efficient way, in a very scalable way, in a way that we're absolutely certain will be correct, and consequently turn around projects much more quickly and address a growing demand within the industry where our competitors are ill-equipped to deal with these kinds of challenges that are increasingly arising in the industry.
What proportion of new series would require this process?
Practically,
is it like 1 in 10, or I just wondered, is it something that's very common, or is it very, very unique?
It's becoming increasingly common. It's becoming increasingly common where content, new content, is being released for its first airing, as it were, is through OTT channels. So if it's not pre-existing, then it will be in this category.
Your accounts, you gave an example, when producing 38 language versions with 4 more rounds of changes, this can give rise to as many as 2.5 million word changes in just one show. And you can actually handle that.
Yeah, the system kind of takes care of it.
Can anyone else handle that?
Well, I guess they could handle it, but they will be doing it in a manual way.
Yeah.
So if they're going through several iterations, because I describe what happens, you go from the first version to the second, but there could be 4 or 5 iterations potentially of the video before it's finalized. And each one potentially has changes of dialogue that you need to be able to track. So, clearly that's a theoretical number that's quoted there, but is possible depending on what kind of changes actually occur within these iterations. So others could deal with this, but they would have to deal with it using, manual processes, people tracking this for themselves and communicating it, so that it will be clearly less reliable, not scalable, and error prone.
Are you the only provider who can work at the pace that the content providers need to work at with these changing?
In scale, we think so. I say in scale because obviously if someone comes to you with one project like that, even a traditional business can probably handle it. But if you're asked to do 100 simultaneous projects like that, that's an entirely different requirement. Clearly built into our strategy through the use of this software is an ability to be scalable. Moving on to the second of 4 elements of our strategy, and this concerns the scalability of the business, which, as I said, begins with the software itself, which is inherently scalable, together with this large freelancer network. As I mentioned already, we've doubled the number of freelancers on a year-on-year basis, so we are approaching 5,500 now, and they collectively across that group, we now have the capability to translate, so to subtitle into 81 languages and to record voices in 25 languages. That said, obviously the amount of dubbing in Fijian we do is far less than the dubbing into French. So the number of popular languages, if you like, currently is around 35 subtitle languages and around 9 dubbing languages. The third element of the strategy concerns our global footprint. And unlike our competitors, we have an approach that means we don't have to incur capital infrastructure costs to establish offices in many locations. And in fact, we provide our services currently out of 3 owned and operated locations, 2 in the UK and 1 in the US. But in territory, we work with partners that we call affiliates who provide a local point of presence. And as I mentioned already, this particular partner has established a new facility in Dubai that gives us, together with them, the opportunity to be able to fulfill all local language services in the Middle Eastern region out of that location. And then fourthly, we always seek to be an approved vendor to the leading buyers of these services. Certainly many of the big buyers will have their own programs that they operate, by which they periodically, say every 3 years, they select the particular vendors they intend to work with for the forthcoming period. And whenever buyers have those programs, we would always seek, and so far I've always been successful in being selected as one of their preferred vendors. And in the period, as I mentioned already, there was a change in program by a big player within the industry, and we are still on the shorter list now of approved vendors for that particular vendor. And we think the outcome of that will be, in the long term, much more favorable for Zoo than it was before. So just to quickly kind of recap an update on the sort of global consumer market trends in our sector. Obviously, what we're seeing is growth in over-the-top services and in subscription video on demand subscriber numbers, which are continuing to grow at a phenomenal rate. So what we're seeing is additions in new organizations who are delivering OTT services in different countries around the world. There are literally hundreds of these operating today, and new ones emerging all the time. Many of them are choosing to differentiate themselves by having exclusive access to certain content. And in many cases, that means funding the acquisition of original content. And there, you know, the leading players are spending multiple billions of dollars in order to commission new TV series and feature films. And that spend, which is, you know, is in aggregate of the order of tens of billions of dollars, is all incremental on top of the annual spend that is being incurred by the traditional established production studios, such as the Hollywood players and others. So there's a significant uplift in original content that's coming to market. And increasingly, that content is being sourced from all around the world. So more and more non-English original language programming is being distributed on a global basis. And is being delivered into more and more countries, which is mandating the need to localize into more and more languages. So these are all factors. However you look at these trends in this global consumer market, they're all favorable for the Zoo business proposition. And just as a reminder, we think that on a global basis, this slide speaks to the Europe, Middle East, and Africa segment of the global market. We think the global market is worth probably somewhere between $3 and $4 billion annually for the services that we deliver. It's growing at double-digit rates, and about 70% of it is in dubbing. So given that we at Zoo have introduced our dubbing services in the last year, that clearly significantly increases the addressable market that's available to us. Just thinking about the competitive environment then, just reflecting for a moment on the traditional way in which these requirements in the industry have been addressed. So our competitors are bricks and mortar organizations. They tend to have operations in multiple countries, dubbing studios or facilities with translators. Many of them engage translators on their payroll. So they tend to be very high in terms of human capital, and they're very inflexible. They're very difficult to scale and to flex because they tend to require growing means more premises and it means more people. There are actually very few companies in the world that, like Zoo, are able to offer subtitling services in any language. So there are many subtitling service providers, but the vast majority of them typically will offer those services in a subset of languages. Clearly, we've designed a proposition here through our cloud-based systems that enable us to be language agnostic when it comes to subtitling. So as long as we have access to translators who could be located anywhere in the world, we can offer these subtitling services on a multilingual basis. And what has happened over the last few years in the industry is that buyers, the large buyers of these services, have tended to increasingly favor vendors like us who can offer the full range of language services when it comes to subtitling. Moving on to dubbing, there actually isn't a single other company in the industry, we believe, that is equipped within their own organization to be able to fulfill dubbing on a truly multilingual basis. So any other organization in this space will typically own and operate one or more dubbing studios that typically gives them the capability to dub into one or more languages. So a traditional provider going into 50 languages would have to have operations most likely in 50 different countries. So there is no other organization like Zoo that has the capability to offer these services in a language agnostic way. And clearly that capability entirely stems from our cloud platforms that give us this scalability and reach across languages that obviates the need to have a physical presence in the countries where these languages are being spoken. The final point I have on this slide is really a reflection on what we're seeing in the industry, that in the same way that in the early days of subtitling, the buyers would work with one vendor who could subtitle into French, another one who could subtitle into German, and so on. Today, the preference is to work with a single vendor who can cover all subtitling languages. We see that trend continuing to move forward. And what we see is seeing more recently is a desire to combine subtitling and dubbing and the digital packaging. It's all part of the same service. And again, those organizations who are able to offer that much broader mix of services will be increasingly attractive in this expanding market. So then focusing on the competitive advantage that we have in the industry, first of all, obviously, the fact that we have this software internally that is giving us these efficiencies and reliability in our processes is minimizing the incidence of human error. That clearly gives us a superior proposition, but one where we can price competitively in the market. The demands of the industry today in dealing with more content in a much shorter period of time to a very high quality standard with a very stringent security requirement is one that we have been built for, but which our competitors have not. So we see that the fact that we are ideally built for addressing, and indeed have been built for addressing today's market requirements and not those of the previous decades. Clearly, as I mentioned, the systematic approach that we take makes us a very reliable, enables us to execute these projects in a very reliable way by minimizing the human interaction and ensuring that there is quality control at every step of the way. The fact that we use this large freelancer network gives us obviously enormous scalability and enables us to uplift capacity or indeed to scale it back if that should be required to meet the needs of clients. Our systems themselves, the cloud platforms, are increasingly used by our clients to gain visibility on our projects. So they can see at any time the state that projects are in, the progress that needs to be made, and they can review deliverables along the way. And our approach of API first in our software development strategy means that our systems from the very outset are designed to interoperate. So all of these different technologies that I've referred to all work seamlessly together because they all have programming interfaces that allows them to talk to one another and share information. And that extends also to integration with our client systems. And there are a number of instances where we or our clients have integrated with external production systems to make that has the effect of making us more sticky and reducing the friction of engaging with us. So there are significant barriers to entry in our proposition. The fact that we combine an R&D function with a service provision is in itself unique within the industry. And it ensures that our R&D is always purposeful and is always driven by delivering enhancements and new capabilities that we'll know will make a difference by making us more efficient or delivering new services to clients that would enable us to grow revenues. The technology itself has obviously been developed over 10 years. We've invested well over $10 million in that development and have sought to protect it along the way. We have a portfolio of patents granted and others that are pending and will continue to file patents where we can. That network of approaching 5,500 freelancers takes a while to build. It's taken us about 6 years to get to this point. These are all handpicked, carefully selected and vetted, validated and approved and onboarded individuals. They are very, found very reliable. They are very loyal to us because of the relationship we have with them. And that clearly will be time consuming and expensive for someone to replicate. The fact that we have these long-term relationships and are trusted by major buyers in the industry clearly is something that that takes a long time to get to that position, during which lots of hoops need to be jumped through. And that's evidenced in the fact that we're now an approved vendor for five of the six major Hollywood studios and three of the leading OTT operators. So that comes, those are hard fought, and clearly there's a lot of trust and consistent delivery of high quality, reliable services that have led to that point. So on the outlook, just turning to the second half, it's off to a great start. The second half will be cash generative, leading to a full year performance that's in line with market expectations. And I've said already that the order book now is at higher levels than it was at the beginning of the first half. And this change that disrupted our first half and led to a softening of certain revenues is now remedied and actually will yield in a much more favorable situation, we believe, for Zoo as we move forward. So in summary, just on the investment proposition, we're working in a market that's worth at least $3 billion. We have a 1% penetration of that market currently, yet it is being served by a limited number of providers who have the means to be able to offer this range of services that we offer. And clearly, our offer is differentiated in the market by virtue of this proprietary software in which we've made a significant investment and built up high barriers to entry. The long-term relationships we have with key clients in the industry enables us to kind of build on those relationships and cross-sell new services, particularly dubbing, as well as the combination of these three important service lines, subtitling, dubbing, and digital packaging. We have a strategy that we believe will deliver good margins and will generate cash as we move forward. And the business is being run by a strong and strategic management team. Thank you.
Do we expect margins to change in the second half?
Yes, they have to. They have to move significantly in the second half of the year. Otherwise, we won't meet market expectations. So, yes.
What can we expect?
Probably nearer 39%.
And going forward, will it change radically beyond?
That comes down to our strategic decision whether we go for growth or we go for cash generation.
On the subject of cash generation,
yes.
When you talk about it being positive in H2, what line are you talking? Are you talking operating cash flows or free cash flow?
So the free cash flow. So.
The money after any internal development costs that you
yes.
capitalise.
So the actual cash that will be in the bank will be at least the same level as last year. So in the full year, we'll be cash neutral because we had 2.4 million in the bank. But at this point in the cycle, we've got 0.9 in the bank. So, and that was the same last year. We started with 0.7 this time last year, ended up with 2.4. And we see a similar pattern this year.
I'd like to get a better understanding, Stuart, of the role of the Dubai office here. Given that one of our key strengths is the ability, one-stop shop for multiple languages, that's what the big orders coming in are going to be asking for. So is it the Dubai office is just adding the Arabic piece to our overall offering? Or is there some greater strategic foresight as to the role that office could play?
You have to consider that we're at the very beginning of our of the journey here. Yeah, and dubbing, we're only just over a year into that journey. And we're working in a competitive environment where the incumbents have been doing this for decades. So there is certainly a kind of proving our capability. There's an element to that that's a play here. The way in which you go about dubbing is disruptive in the industry. So it's a different approach. It requires people to work in a different way. So, in the traditional world, voice actors are handheld. You know, they're taken into a studio, they have to travel there. But, you know, they're placed in a room and other people around them are doing all of the stuff that needs to be done. They're operating digital audio workstations, mixing desks, they're queuing things there. There's someone in the next room who's a dubbing director who's kind of overseeing what they're doing and so on. So in our ecosystem, to gain the scalability, we have virtualized aspects of that process, particularly the recording engineer, for example. So in our ecosystem, we don't need a recording engineer to operate a complex software system. We've basically embedded that within our cloud software and dumbed it down so that a voice actor can do that for themselves. But clearly that's a new thing that they're being asked to do that they haven't had to do before. And so when we think about expanding dubbing, we're not saying to everyone, you just need to do what you've done before and we'll just, you know, provide more of it. We're saying you need to change the way in which you work, because you won't any longer have these people around you doing this stuff for you. You'll be working, you know, maybe in your back bedroom or maybe in a little recording studio down the road with a laptop and an internet connection. And so that change, some people, and what we're finding is that, you know, young actors coming to doing this take to it like fish to water, but the, you know, more established actors, you know, a little bit wary of it, a bit uncertain, don't need to be trained to do it. And the key people in this jigsaw actually are the dubbing directors, because they're the gateway actually for each language version, because a dubbing director is assigned to every language version of every project. So a key thing for us is to make sure that we have access to that talent who are trained and capable of working with us in, as part of our ecosystem. And in cases like, in the Middle East, where there isn't a huge abundance of established dubbing studios, who in any case may not be interested in collaborating with us at this stage, we felt we needed to have a location where we could train local dubbing directors and voice actors, bring them in and show them how they operate, do some of the initial recordings in those settings until they're kind of equipped and understand how they need to work, and they can go off and do that on a more distributed basis. So it's more to do with seeding a particular market, I think. That's the way to think of it. That facility that's built in Dubai does not look like a traditional dubbing studio. It doesn't have big spaces with adjacent control rooms, glass screens, expensive digital audio workstations, mixing desks. It doesn't have any of that. It contains a series of voice booths with a laptop and a microphone and a screen, and that's purpose configured for our ecosystem.
Will they be doing other languages, or are they just fulfilling Arabic?
No. So one of the things that, building on Stuart's answer, is it's actually a gateway into the whole region, and we're already picking up orders in Turkey, and doing Turkish content into other languages, and it's also a gateway into India as well, which we've won some business there.
So it could become a hub for us for non-English original content.
For regional languages.
Regional, yeah.
Stuart, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.